When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC, all around the Sports Grid Network. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. Another day in Indianapolis, but Scott, this day, a leap day, a special day in the month of February, actually starts the workouts on the field at the NFL Combine in Indianapolis. The defensive side of the football will be in action. Defensive linemen, linebackers taking the turf today inside Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. We will see some workouts. We will get some measurements. And again, Scott, it continues the theme of the week in Indy. We get to hear from people around the National Football League. That gives us headlines to discuss early on here in the offseason.
Yeah, you wonder, yeah, we talked a little bit about it yesterday, but you just wonder the preconceived notion of how good a player may or may not be, and you get him into the combines, whether it's the actual drills or it's the discussions with the players, you wonder how much changes over the next few days, right? Is it just a preset notion? I just want to make sure the guy's not a dope, or, you know, or is it like, I really got to break down these numbers? Oh, he only really had a 4.4. I thought he was going to run a 4.3. All right, we got to drop him for the first round to the second, you know? So you wonder how much change is going to be made over the next couple of days.
Yeah, I really think, Scott, when you look at what happens in Indianapolis or a pro day for the most part, that when NFL evaluators for their draft process, they're starting their selection process that has, of course, already been started. When they're looking at things from the combine or a pro day, I don't think anything that can happen is a true detriment or a negative. I think an athletic profile can only be a positive and improve your draft evaluation once you match that up with what you see on tape. Somebody can run the fastest 40 if he's a wide receiver and had 17 drops last year at the collegiate level, that should be a bigger hindrance to his draft stock than anything he did in shorts during a workout, even at the NFL scouting combine. Let's make sure we bring in that Sirius XM audience here, channel 159. 159 is the home for Sports Grid Radio on Sirius XM. This is a Thursday on Football Full Circle. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. But we do have those workouts starting on this Thursday in Indianapolis. But as we have said now multiple times, Scott, it's not just about the workouts. It's not just about the measurements and what is said. It's about what we learn from Indy as well. This I found a little bit peculiar. It is a new era in Washington for sure. But new owner Joshua Harris has been a part of all of the six interviews the Washington team has conducted with the top quarterback prospects in the draft, which might make sense. The Commanders own that second overall pick, but you have an owner that appears to be very hands-on. And I think it's the age-old debate from fans or maybe personnel in the National Football League, maybe within that specific organization, just how exactly hands-on do you want the owner or ownership group to be? You probably just want their investment and their money, not necessarily their influence in decision-making.
Yeah, but that's old school, Ben. You know, the days of an owner just saying, all right, I'm going to hire my general manager, and he's going to hire the coach, and that's going to be the pecking order. I'm going to stay on the sidelines. You don't even know I exist. Those days are long gone. These owners, they're paying way too much money now. And it's just, you know, it's the nature of the beast no matter what you do. You get involved like that, you spend that kind of money. This is not a secondary thing for these guys. This is their main thing. They're gazillionaires, so they're doing this because of the ego for the most part, you know, some because they think they're going to make money, which they will. But, you know, a lot of it's just they want to get involved. They love sports. And to think that an owner is going to sit on the sidelines nowadays, boy, that's rare. That's the rarity. It used to be the other way around, but that's the rarity. So is he going to be making decisions? Is he going to be a Jerry Jones? Is he going to be a Wellington Mara that generally stays out of things with the Giants, right? You know, is he going to be a happy medium? You know, you had Daniel Snyder. How'd that work out? So,
right.
But these guys, to think they're going to be on the sidelines and staying out of it, nah, not going to happen anymore.
And it is a really good point as well, Scott, when you think about it from that ownership perspective. The investment now, well into the billions. The Washington sale was the most expensive franchise ever in professional American sports in the history of what we have known. Of course, that is inflation, that is growing rates, there's all the money that goes into the National Football League. But with that investment comes some sort of say beyond just signing a paycheck to approve it, comes some sort of say in terms of that decision-making. Now, just based on that report from ESPN's Adam Schefter, does not necessarily mean by any length of the imagination, Scott, that if Josh Harris is like, no, I like Drake May more than Jaden Daniels, that that's the final say. Could it be? Sure. But I think it's all a part of just the evaluation process where maybe he gives his opinion and his own analysis, but hopefully you would hope a good and strong owner trusts in the people that he pays to use their best talents where they are best suited to make the ultimate correct decision. Because we did see this, Scott, it would seem, a year ago in Carolina. There were some reports, of course, that C.J. Stroud was going to be the guy to go number one overall. Then it was Bryce Young, who the Panthers ultimately selected. And Bryce Young was the favorite to be that first overall pick for much of the NFL draft cycle. And then with the dismissal of Frank Reich after only 11 games, it reared its ugly head again. The decisions between ownership and the relationship with the personnel staff and, of course, the coaching staff in terms of what that quarterback was going to be. Where David Tepper, for instance, in Carolina, comes to pretty swift judgments.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if I'm a GM, you know, it's easy to spend other people's money, right, as the saying goes. But yeah. I tell you, Ben, if I like quarterback A, we'll just say it's the quarterback position, and my owner says, nope, we're drafting quarterback B, and I'm really, like, strong on quarterback A, I mean, I wouldn't do it. You know, I mean, maybe I would tell him, okay, I'll do it, and then come draft day, you know, draft the guy I really like, and if I get fired, I get fired. I mean, somewhere along the line, yes, it's the owner, he owns the team, he runs the show, I get all that, but I'm hired to do a job, and I'm not going to put my neck on the line because of a quarterback you like when I know better than you and I don't like him. Like I said, it's easy to spend other people's money and think you would do that if you were in those shoes. But from the outside looking in, I appreciate your interest in the quarterback position. I appreciate that. But it's up to me to explain to you, Mr. Owner, on why that's not the right quarterback. And so it's part of the sales job as being a GM, right? You got to be able to sell your owner. Listen, this guy's not it. He's not the answer. My guy is. So if you can't do that, then you know, you get blamed for it. And maybe you should, because you're not able to sell your owner on why your quarterback is the right one.
It's a good point, too, right? It's just how relationships work in the business and professional world in any line of work. If you're presenting at a meeting and there is a big decision to be made in your company, there might be multiple pitches. And then you evaluate based on all the sample that you have to make whatever that ultimate decision is. And obviously, you want to trust the general manager. You want to trust your lead draft scouts and talent evaluators. And they should probably have a bigger say than people who have not built their life in football. But with that being said, it's all a part of the meetings and the organization of how things break down. Again, we've got guys in shorts working out today in Indianapolis. We've got measurables. We've got measurements. We've got all of that for the first time in Indy as the scout combine really begins. We will look at some of those big players here that are taking the field today, and I mean literally big, the defensive linemen and the linebackers into the fold and some of the big names that you need to know out of Indianapolis. Not a ton ton of NFL draft markets out just yet, but we'll use some of the odds to paint the picture in Indy. On the other side of the break, live right here on Football Full Circle on Sports Grid Radio.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on Football Full Circle. It is FFC. The Combine officially begins today in Indianapolis. The NFL Scouting Combine, the players, the prospects will meet with the media, and they will get measured up, and they will work out today on the turf inside Lucas Oil Stadium. It's the linebackers and the defensive linemen, Scott, that will be out there on this Thursday. And there are some big names to know. Now, nobody is going to overtake the quarterbacks in the top one, two, or three of the NFL draft. More than likely, Marvin Harrison Jr., the wide receiver out of Ohio State, is going to go fourth overall. So then we might get to the big fellows. Then we might get to some of the defensive players that could be in action today in Indianapolis. There's a couple of names that I would like to highlight here that we will hear from and we will see out there working out. From the edge rusher perspective out of Penn State, Chop Robinson, one of the best names for a defensive player in football, an edge rusher, Chop Robinson, that's a pretty good one. Jared Verse from Florida State, Leatu Latu out of UCLA as well. And then Scott, the biggest player at the combine, and I don't mean in terms of name or value, but just in terms of weight, Tavondre Sweat, the big defensive lineman out of Texas who caught a touchdown in the Big 12 championship game victory over Oklahoma State this past December. He was listed at 365. He stepped on the scales today in Indianapolis, officially 366 pounds. He's a big boy who could make a big difference at the next level.
Yeah, I mean that's big. It's even big for 2024. I'd like to know, like, some of the drills they'll be running today. You know, and some of these are interesting, right? 40-yard dash. You know, I get bench press. Certainly, I understand the three cone drill. We're going back and forth. I get vertical jump. It starts to be a little bit of a stretch for me on how high the guy can jump. But okay, but the one you're gonna have to explain to me is the broad jump. You know, I know what it is, obviously, but how does that equate to you being an NFL defensive lineman or offensive lineman or any other position, really, for that matter? You know, broad jump, you know, from my 350-pound defensive lineman, I'm not going to draft a guy because he only jumped 5 feet, you know, versus the other guy was able to draft, you know, your jump 6 feet. I mean, I guess it all pertains, Ben, to the athletic ability. So you want to have all these goofy little track and field things. I understand that, but still, broad jump, really?
Yeah, I think it all has to do with explosiveness, with athleticism, and how you can move through the air even within your frame and body weight. That would be my guess. Again, Scott, I think it's like, ooh, that's a number where we have pretty much sampled out a defensive lineman. If somebody sails over that number, let's say the average for D lineman, I'm making these up, these are not the actual averages, is 8 feet and 2 inches. Who knows, right? And if you have somebody that's 335 pounds that can broad jump 10 feet and 8 inches. Wow. Now, that's something to pay attention to. That would be my guess in terms of how they use it. Again, I don't really know. And anything that happens in Indianapolis, in my estimation, is just a piece of the puzzle in terms of your overall NFL draft evaluation of a specific prospect. It is not the be-all, end-all by any means. But we are hearing from some players that have arrived in Indy. The workout schedule is as such: linebackers and defensive linemen today. We will have more workouts on Friday as well. We know for a fact, Scott, that the quarterbacks are going to be out there on Saturday. That will draw a lot of eyeballs to Indianapolis. Tomorrow, by the way, defensive backs and tight ends. So some of those DBs and tight ends are meeting with the media on this Thursday, including Brock Bowers, who is going to be a top 10 pick, the tight end out of Georgia that is seen as the prototype of this next evolution of tight end in the National Football League. A straight line time blocker, but also somebody that can go down and is an athlete and make play after play in any portion of the football field. He was asked if he plans to work out in Indianapolis, go through the on-field workouts. He said he hasn't decided yet. It's a personal decision, and he'll figure it out when he shows up to the stadium tomorrow on a Friday.
Okay, you're good enough. Tight ends Friday. Saturday, by the way, quarterbacks, wide receivers, and running backs. They combined them this year, all three. He reminds me of Kyle Pitts, Ben, in that when I watch Pitts at Florida, I know different position, right? Although not really, you know. No. But, you know, what tight end, wide receiver, you know, looks like he could play both. But even more importantly than that, he just looked like he was a man playing against boys. And that's how I kind of viewed Pitts when he was in Florida. I mean, he was so good, so dominant. It was just like, wow, this guy's going to be phenomenal. And we've yet to see that, whether that's the quarterback or the offense, whatever at Atlanta. But it hasn't happened so far for Pitts. But he kind of reminds me that way. There aren't too many tight ends over the year that I would say I would use a first-round draft choice on, because most of these guys are the same. There's a few now that have kind of extended that position a little bit more. So I'm more open to that thinking, but man, he looks so good in college, Bowers. You just wonder how he can't miss, you know, or how he'll miss if he does at all in the NFL. And how high would you use it? You know, we've seen him go in the top five, for goodness sakes. Pitts, you know, set the record if you want to classify him as a tight end. But, you know, hopefully he'll have a little more success than what Kyle said.
Yeah, Kyle Pitts, the highest ever drafted tight end at fourth overall to the Atlanta Falcons. Now, what is so interesting about the comparison to Kyle Pitts, based on college, wow, what an accolade to be in the same breath as Kyle Pitts. Brock Bowers might be even slightly better. That's just my takeaway for it. Scott, you got a guy in Brock Bowers that in his 3 years in Georgia had 5 rushing touchdowns. Last year, he had 6 carries for 28 yards and a touchdown. In 2022, 9 carries, 109 yards in 3 scores. They utilized him everywhere they could on the football field. He had 13 receiving touchdowns in his first year in Athens. He had close to 1,000 yards and 63 grabs 2 years ago. Last year was plagued by injury, but when he was out there, virtually unstoppable. Game after game, more than 100 receiving yards and in the biggest spots, including a 51-13 win over Kentucky, in which he had 7 grabs for 132 yards and a touchdown. That was Georgia's first real test last year in 2023. I think Brock Bowers is a surefire first-round pick. I think Brock Bowers is probably a surefire top 10 pick. So when you look at Brock Bowers now, there are NFL draft odds available for him. Specifically, when you look at Brock Bowers in the 2024 NFL draft, the team most likely to draft him, the LA Chargers, at a 2-1 price. That's where it stacks up right now. I wonder what Jim Harbaugh and company decide to do. The Chargers draft 5th overall. A 2-1 price, Scott, as we know in this market, is actually pretty short comparatively. It's not minus money. It's not an odds-on favorite by any means. But at plus 200 for the Bolts to go out and get Brock Bowers, he could be a future cornerstone of that offense to pair up with Justin Herbert.
Yeah, you have to ask yourself, is Bowers at tight end better than any other wide receiver I could get, you know, at that point? And really, you know, that's a heck of a compliment when you consider, listen, quarterbacks are going to go. Whether you're better than them or not, they're just going to go. That's the nature of the beast, the first 3 spots, right? So you're really being the second person taken off the board. That's pretty impressive. You know, that really is good. But he's kind of like, you don't want to put this kind of pressure on him. But I do see like a little Travis Kelce in him. You know, they don't fool around with him in the 30s and the 40 area. You know, they throw him the football in the red zone, kind of like they do with Kelce, especially a younger Kelce. So, I mean, he's got that athletic ability, maybe deceptive for whatever reason. And he's like I said, I watch him and it's like, boy, they could throw to him every single time. Every single time you look down and feel this guy is wide open. So. I like him a lot.
For sure. And Kyle Pitts kind of reset the way that we think about the tight end position. Again, drafted 4th overall in 2021 by the Falcons, the highest a tight end has ever gone in the history of the National Football League draft. Scott, in the last 2 years, there has only been one first-round selection at the tight end spot. That was Dalton Kincaid a year ago, 25th overall to the Buffalo Bills. The first tight end drafted in 2022 was Trey McBride by the Arizona Cardinals. That was in the 2nd round with the 23rd pick. player, the 55th selection overall. 2019, we saw the two tight ends out of Iowa and TJ Hawkinson and Noah Fant drafted in the top 20. The year before that, Hayden Hurst at 25th overall. It is not often that you will see a tight end in the top 10 in the history of the NFL. So if they are, they must prove their draft grade worth. We're back here on Football Full Circle in just a few.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle. So, Scott, as more news comes around from the NFL Scouting Combine, we will continue to bring it to you here around the National Football League. Scott, we finished with something yesterday that was breaking news to us, if you really want to categorize it as breaking news, that we got to discuss just a little bit. That was Zach Wilson being given permission by the New York Jets to seek a trade. You believe there might be a market out there? We'll see what Zach Wilson has moving forward. There was also an idea that there was already a talk of Zach Wilson going to Kansas City to learn under Patrick Mahomes if the Jets were to release him and the Chiefs could get him on a very cheap deal. But I think it's really interesting, Scott, that Zach Wilson is where he is at this stage of his career, and not just for the individual in Zach. The fact that the Jets tried to make him the quarterback of the future even last year, to learn under Aaron Rodgers, to gain knowledge under Aaron's tutelage, for understanding that Aaron Rodgers, who was 39 last year, will be 40 entering 2024, would not be with the Jets even if it went as well as one could possibly hope. That maybe then, entering year 5 or 6, Zach Wilson could step up and in and be the face of the franchise they believed he could be back in 2021 when they drafted him second overall. So where exactly does this leave the future of the Jets outside of this year, Scott, in 2024? Because if they don't win this year, and I don't really think they're going to, with a 40-year-old quarterback coming off of a torn Achilles in his left leg, what happens to the Jets in the next 3 to 5 to 7 years beyond?
You know what? The people that are there now won't have any say because they'll all be fired. Out will be rotten. Listen, there's some talk about Saleh being fired this year because of how things have, you know, behind the scenes have gone with the Jets. Same thing with Joe Douglas, but the owner came out and said, okay, Woody Johnson, we're going to give this one more crack. We got Rodgers. He's here. He wants to play. So, okay. I got a feeling if Rodgers said, you know what? I'm done. I tried. I failed. The whole regime would be, you know, thrown out the door as well. So
yeah,
this is like an all or nothing absolute this year. They don't have a backup quarterback. You know, they're going to get rid of Zach. They don't have anybody else, as we saw last year. So I don't know if they're going to be drafting. I really doubt with these guys' jobs on the line, I doubt they would draft a quarterback, you know, in the first couple of rounds that normally you'd say, okay, but we better draft a guy. I don't think they have that luxury. They don't have the ability. Well, they have the ability, but they don't have the luxury of, you know, wasting, if you will, a high draft choice on a player that theoretically is not going to play. So it'll be a complete different hole. They're going to hit rock. If they haven't already hit rock bottom, they're going to hit even lower rock bottom, get like a top 2-3 draft choice, and have to really start all over again. It's not going to be pretty, that's for sure.
Yeah, it will be very, very ugly indeed. Right now, Scott, when you look at the odds, the New York Jets 16-1 to win the AFC Championship, tied for the 7th best price with the LA Chargers. Of course, 7 is an important number in the National Football League based on the playoff format. 7 teams, 4 divisional winners, 3 wild card berths into the playoffs in each conference. They are both, that being the Bolts and the Jets, a full dollar in front of the Jacksonville Jaguars at 17-1. We know how competitive the AFC is going to be year in and year out based on the quarterback play and the age of said QBs in the AFC. Right now, Scott, they check in third in terms of those divisional prices, or third in the conference prices based on the AFC East division. The Bills plus 650, the Dolphins 11-1, the Jets a full $5 behind that at 16-1. At this stage last year, Scott, well, a couple of weeks away, we thought it was going to be New York, and then Aaron Rodgers in the middle of March went on to the Pat McAfee show and said his only intention was to play for the New York Jets. It was plus 750 for New York, fourth best price to win the AFC in front of the Dolphins. It was a 9.5 win total, and the over had the juice, and the Jets were favored to make the postseason, snapping a historic 12-year playoff drought. Now make that 13, the longest of any organization in the four major men's professional sports in the United States, or mainly North America. That be the NBA, the NHL, and of course, Major League Baseball as well. Scott, both you and I last year thought some of this excitement, some of this expectation wouldn't necessarily be delivered upon. I don't think we expected Aaron Rodgers to not have any say in it, but even with a healthy Aaron Rodgers, did not expect the Jets to be a surefire double-digit win team and easily walk in to the AFC playoffs. So knowing we felt that way this year, what do you think about the outlook for gangrene in 2024?
I feel even more pessimistic. I mean, you said at the beginning there, he's 40 years old coming off an Achilles injury. I mean, we were questioning, you know, Kirk Cousins at the 35 or whatever he is coming off an Achilles. You know, tack on five more years. And, you know, and unfortunately, as we know this story, we didn't even get a chance to see what Rodgers would be just from the year before when it was with Green Bay, when he was completely healthy and he really wasn't any good. I mean, look at that Packer team this year with those basically same wide receivers. How much better they were this year. So unfortunately, we didn't get that. Now we're, you know, going to be a year removed, plus the injury from the last time we saw Rodgers play, and the odds are reflecting it, right? And you said it. This time last year, people were talking about how good the Jets could be, and they were one of the higher choices. Now they're 30-1, in the middle of the pack. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I don't know what this team is going to be like. I don't know if the head coach is going to last or the quarterback's going to last. Who's to say he won't get injured again? You know, I mean, he got injured just – I know that's how it happens with Achilles. Just drop him back to pass. You know, he was under pressure a little bit, but it's not like he got hit, you know, running, scrambling or anything along those lines. I just think it's going to be a tough, tough year. And I tell you know, the other thing, Ben, real quickly, with the Joe Douglas telling the world that Zach Wilson can go find himself a suitor, you know, that's just another knock against Joe Douglas, right? That's your job. You're the GM. It's your responsibility to go find a trade partner, not the player or not the agent. I know we've heard and seen that done before, but you know, when you have so many question marks about your career anyway, now you're throwing one more on there. What do you mean it's up to the quarterback to go find a trade? You go find the trade. You call the 31 other teams. You talk to the GM. You know the GMs as well as the agent does. Why does the player have to feel responsible to go find a trade? I mean, it's another example of just how things are not run well with this New York Jet team. Stories today about Mecole Hardman, who was on the Jets, leaking news to Kansas City and Philadelphia when the Jets were playing those two teams. It's like, what is going on with this organization?
Yeah,
I
completely
think it's
agree.
Disastrous.
Yeah. I think it will be. I think it is going to continue to be this year. And I think, as you said, Scott, if it doesn't work out this season, and then after the Aaron Rodgers era, it quickly ends with no level of success, everybody is gone. It's a clean slate. It's a fresh house. It's all of those things for the New York Jets. Mecole Hardman telling the Chiefs, come get me, is pretty much what he told Kansas City, and then was able to speak to guys that he knew about things that were happening within the Jets franchise. And of course, Mecole Hardman ended up playing a pretty significant role, catching the game-winning touchdown in overtime for the Kansas City Chiefs in Super Bowl 58 when he was absolutely nothing on the New York Jets, barely registering any stats whatsoever. Scott, in Indianapolis is where the combine is. In Indy, it's not a far drive for Colts GM Chris Ballard to meet with the media at the scouting combine. And he wasn't asked so much about Indy's plans in the draft, but what they are going to do entering 2024 with impending free agent wide receiver Michael Pittman Jr. Could be that top target for Anthony Richardson in what will probably be his like true full rookie season, or at least his first full season in the National Football League in 2024. And there is hope for this Indy team. So when Chris Ballard was asked about Pittman yesterday, if he will be a Colt in 2024, he had a very simple reply. Just said yes. Didn't give much more than that. They moved on afterward, but said, yes, Michael Pittman Jr. is going to return to Indianapolis. I think the Colts are an interesting team as well. Overexceeded expectation this season with Gardner Minshew. And the hope was to develop Anthony Richardson so that they could overexceed expectation maybe next year and the year after and moving forward. They had a great year with Minshew. They were in the running for that AFC South divisional title, of course. In the final weekend, week 18 against the Texans, Houston won that game in what was a great game late with the Jags lost the next day on a Sunday. The Texans won the division. That very well could have been the Indianapolis Colts in what was virtually a pick'em line for that football game. So, Scott, what do you think 2024 holds for the Colts?
Might be one of those teams that takes a step back, right? If in fact Richardson does play, it seems like they might have to franchise Pittman if they can't come to a long-term deal, which is always possible. That's big-time money, but it can be done. But you made grounds last year with the veteran backup quarterback, and like you said, it was pretty successful, all things considered. But you're really starting all over again. And you hate to say it, but it was almost like a wasted year. You didn't get to the playoffs, unfortunately, so you can't make that stride even. So you can't say, okay, at least we got a game experience in the postseason. That didn't happen. And now you're starting from square one with your rookie quarterback in essence, right? So, but there's still a lot of talent, right? I mean, the backfield is still loaded. If anything else, they got one of the best running back cores in the NFL. If you re-sign Pittman, get him on board, there is some talent. You're in a conference division that's a little bit better, I guess, perceived-wise now that the Texans are the Texans and Jacksonville. But I think it'll be a little bit of a struggle. I'm looking at 5-6 wins, unless Richardson comes in and shocks everybody like Stroud did last year. But I don't anticipate that. As much as I like him, I think he's going to be a good quarterback. I think you're looking at a 4-5-6 win season for Indianapolis.
Yeah, the win total last year was 6.5 for Indianapolis. Of course, they went over that number. I don't know if it's all that different this year, despite going over by a few wins a season ago. I just don't know, based on Anthony Richardson not really having the sample size. Gave some moments while he was out there, but really only played in 4 fully healthy games for the Colts a year ago, who of course finished at 9-8. Some college football playoff expansion talk again. Really? We're doing this again? Why fix a system we don't even know is broken? We'll talk about it up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on FFC. Scott, if you remember the update last week, after we got the 5+7, the new format for the 12-team expanded college football playoff that begins in 2024, CFP expansion talk wasn't done there. We had just finished trying to detail what this new system and format was going to look like for the better public that loves college football before we got another update from ESPN's Pete Thamel that the CFP Board of Governors, who had just 24 hours prior approved the change of the 5+7 format, was already discussing a 14-team or maybe 16-team college football playoff expansion following the end of this TV deal with the CFP that closes out in 2 years at the end of 2025. And if the report was out there and the words used were optimistic about the future and the expansion of the college football playoff, you knew it had some legs. Well, apparently, it's got some real legs, as we got another update yesterday from Yahoo Sports' Ross Dellinger when it comes to what that format of a 14-team CFP would look like. It would be 3 automatic bids from the Big Ten, from the SEC, 2 automatic bids from the ACC and the Big 12, an auto bid for a group of 5 team, and then 3 at-large berths. Scott, it very much follows the European soccer model of how we decide the Champions League, but obviously that is a much larger sampling of teams around the entire globe than the leagues that we have in college football. I am already starting to, Scott, miss the BCS at this point.
I've been saying this for I don't know how long, Ben. I'm pretty sure I told you as well. This is going to go to 16. I don't know why they're even pausing at 14. What are they going to get? The top two teams, buys? I mean, just go to 16, you know, and who knows? It'll eventually maybe go to 24. You know, you got to matriculate the ball down the field, as Hank Stram once said many moons ago. You know, it's just like the NCAA tournament, you know. You just get to where you ultimately you're going to go. It's going to go to 16. It's going to go more. And to tell you, the people that are in a lot of trouble are these bowls, because the more games you have in this playoff, the more you're going to have home games on campus, because you're not selling out in Shreveport, Louisiana, a game between, you know, Colorado versus whoever, right? No one's showing up locally, and you can't afford to go all over the country, you know, 3-4 times. So you're going to have it on campus. But it's just like you said, we haven't even gotten 1 year from 12, and there's already considerable buzz about making it 14. Just make it 16. I don't know why also, Ben, and I'm okay with it. I you know, more the merrier. I don't think it minimizes anything in the regular season. I really don't. You may have to find a way to make these conference championship games meaningful, but I don't understand why they want to lock themselves in. 3 SEC. All right, that really shouldn't be a problem. 3 Big Ten. That probably shouldn't be a problem. Getting 2 out of the ACC, that could be a problem. You know, it's only really recently that Florida State's been a viable opportunity. Otherwise, it's been Clemson and nobody. Getting 2 out of the new Big 12, why would you want to automatically have to have 2 teams out of that conference? I mean, I could see the champion out of that conference having 3 wins, let alone the second place. So I understand why they just can't say 14. All right, we want 14, we want 16, whatever number it is. Top 14 teams, champion from the conferences we like, get automatic bids. Oh, we're okay with that, and that's that. Why these automatic qualifiers? I don't get that.
Yeah, I think they're still trying to keep the idea of a conference championship having some worth and meaning, which I agree with, which is great. But why not then just an automatic bid to the conference champion of the top 4 conferences and then take the 10 other best teams behind that if you are still trying to hold on to the idea that conference titles matter? A couple of things on the 14-team format, specifically as laid out, 3 plus 3 plus 2 plus 2 plus the 1 group of 5 and the 3 at-large berths. I can't believe the Big Ten and the SEC would even welcome this kind of idea and didn't just say, shut up, shut up, shut up. You don't know what you're talking about in the meeting when this idea of a format came up. Because, Scott, in my estimation, there is the Power 4, the ACC, the Big 10, the Big 12, and the SEC following the collapse of the Pac-12 and getting rid of the Power 5. But really, there's the Power 2. There's the two conferences that move the needle. That's the Big 10 and the SEC. They control the big TV partners in college football, Big 10 with Fox, NBC, and CBS. The SEC now starting with its huge deal with Disney/ESPN. And then when we speak of the TV relationships for the CFP, the reason we would see expansion after only 2 years of a 12-team expanded field would be a new television contract starting in 2026. More games, more inventory, mainly more money. But I don't know why the Big Ten would say, in the 12-team format, I can get 3-4 teams. The SEC can have their 3-4. There might be just one automatic qualifier from the Big 12 or the ACC or that other group of 5 team. We control more pieces of the pie in the 12-team format than the 14-team. Do they think it is more egalitarian? Do they think it brings about more equality in college football to go 3-3-2-2-1? I don't. I think it waters down the product. And I actually do think it kind of demeans regular season success in a certain way where it does not now in the 12-team college football playoff format. I don't get it. I really don't get it from the perspective of we haven't even seen a 12-team college football playoff yet, and we are already focusing on the future. I understand the timeline that it lines up with the TV revenue and the new TV contract. And as we have learned in the last 5 years in college football, if we did not already know, money drives the bus. The TV revenue is the economic engine that leads to all of these sweeping changes that we are seeing in conference realignment. I get that. But why are we already trying to fix a system that we're not even sure is broken? That was the fix and the solution initially to a four-team format we didn't like and we thought was too rigid. That's the part that, as a fan, I truly don't get, where it seems as though, Scott, those people in the CFP Board of Governors, the one representative from the College Football Playoff, the 10 commissioners from the 10 conferences at the FBS level now, are having these conversations where it seems like they have zero insight on what actually makes college football the lovable, unique product that it is.
Yeah, it's the money, right? I mean, as soon as they open that Pandora's box to the possibility of more than just a 2 or a 4-team playoff, that, okay, I think they realize, wow, you know what? We go to 12. Look at all these contracts. Look at all these people calling us saying they want a part of this thing. Let's expand it then even more. Let's get, instead of having a four-letter network control the whole thing, let's get Fox involved. Let's get CBS involved. And I think between those people and then the Bulls trying to, you know, get their foot in the door of this thing somehow, some way as well, it just leads to more and more games, which, you know, you need more and more teams. The tricky thing to me will be to keep the conference championship games meaningful, because if you have three qualifiers out of the SEC, how do you determine that third qualifier? And then clearly the two teams that go to the championship game, they're in, right? You know, come hook or crook, they're in. If you're going to get three automatics or even two automatics from the ACC and Big 12, you're going to offer buys, but then the four buys don't match up with a 14 playoff. That's why it's got to go to at least 16 somehow or another. That to me would be, listen, I don't have my model brain on right now to think this thing out mathematically, but 14 teams does not, you know, if you go 1-14, 2-13, you're going to leave yourself with 7 teams. You're going to give a bye in the second round then? I mean, it sounds kind of goofy. So, but you're locking yourself in, and it's only going to go higher. Just like I said, sit down, figure out this is where we're going to end up. You know, 10 years from now, where do we want to be? Probably at 16 teams. Let's just make it 16 now, Ben. Just get it done with, rather than have to just little by little, piece by piece, get to the point where we know we're going to end up anyway.
Scott, I think you raise an excellent point, and I actually might have a small answer to that question, or at least an idea. Josh Pate, one of the leading media personalities in college football, had a sit-down conversation before this college football playoff even played out with Fox's lead color commentator, analyst Joel Klatt, who of course is in the number one booth on Fox with Gus Johnson. And Joel Klatt is great, has been around college football, is a great analyst in my opinion, but also has a podcast, has a weekly show where he talks about the hot topics in college football. And they were having this conversation about potential expansion of the college football playoff and what it looks like in this new and reimagined landscape that is conference realignment. So you mentioned the three teams from the Big Ten or the three teams from the SEC. What does it matter if Ohio State and Oregon, the two favorites right now, play each other in the Big Ten championship game? That's not going to determine a spot in this 14-team format if they finish 1-2. And Joel Klatt's idea and what he thought was likely, Scott, to that question is those conference championship games might now be between teams 3 and 4 who finish 3rd and 4th in the standings of your conference throughout a regular season and then battle it out for what would be that 3rd spot. Why try to do anything to blemish the resume of an Ohio State or Oregon in a Big Ten title game, which is now meaningless for the top 2 teams? You're trying to get that 3rd team to earn the spot, so why not play it between Penn State and Michigan, the teams with the 3rd and 4th best prices in the preseason odds for 2024. That determines the 3rd and final spot out of the Big Ten, not who finished with the 1st and 2nd best record in the conference throughout the year, which again, I think then diminishes the product and lessens the product and demeans the regular season.
That's interesting. If we do this, Ben, then what we're going to have to force these teams, and I don't think this will ever happen, but we're going to have to force these teams to say, you know what, you don't get 4 or 5 at-large games. You don't. You got to play at least 10 conference games. With all these teams now joining these conferences, we can't have you play 6 games and then figure out all these goofy tiebreakers. You got to play, you know, like I said, maybe 1, maybe 2 out of conference just because of rivalries between non-conference teams, but you got to play at least 10 games. You just have to. That would be weird. You know, 3 and 4, You know, what if, and I guess it would be just a head-to-head tiebreaker to have the actual champ, if you really want to say I'm the champion. Are we going to give buys to those teams that actually won the conference championship? But 3-4, that's interesting. I'd have to think about that. You know, yeah. We might get used to that, I suppose. They're going to be good teams, right? They're not going to be bad football teams. So it's not like we're getting bottom feeder clubs here. That'd be kind of interesting.
Yeah, it would be, right? It provides that incentive. It would be a place to play out a football game that would be the ultimate decider of who gets a spot into said 14-team format as one of the automatic qualifiers of the college football playoff. But then you could have issues with what happens with the at-large berths, all of that stuff. Right. I just think it complicates the process. And, Scott, I completely agree, by the way. The Big Ten has played 9 conference games for some time. The Pac-12 used to play 9 conference games as well. The SEC, despite expanding to 16 teams with Oklahoma and Texas this upcoming season, is still playing only 8 conference games. It's crazy, but I don't fault them necessarily, because then the overall records could be selected and primed to be better, to be in consideration for those at-large bids to a college football playoff. And again, if we are starting to focus only on conference play, what does that do to some of the non-conference, out-of-conference rivalries that we see? What does that do to the lesser level of the sport? And again, I think that means we are trending toward the professional model, where we have conferences and divisions that look like the National Football League, that are geographically tied, that really kind of look like what we have seen in college football for quite some time. We're back on Football Full Circle with a few more closing thoughts here after the break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on Football Full Circle for just a few more moments. Yesterday, Scott, at the NFL Combine, although the quarterbacks don't work out on the field till Saturday, there were so many meetings for one Jaden Daniels. He met with all of the 3 teams that are drafting in the top 3, the Bears, the Commanders, and the Patriots, in that order, and the list did not stop there. You can add the Falcons to that too, the Vikings, the Jets, the Giants, the Raiders, the Seahawks, and the Saints. That is a large group of people waiting to meet with quarterback Jaden Daniels, and NFL Network's Ian Rappaport also shared out that Drake May virtually had the same interview list. A slight update to the odds in terms of the 3rd overall pick in the 2024 NFL Draft. Both Jaden Daniels and Drake May, Scott, have the same exact number, plus 170. They are co-favorites to go 3rd overall. Correlate that to Drake May being the odds-on favorite to be the 2nd overall pick, however you would like.
Yeah, you know, if you're a real gambler, you bet both, right? At plus 170 odds, you know, you're risking 2 units to win, you know, less than 1 plus 70. But, you know, I mean, chances are really good it's going to be one of those 2. I still like Daniel. And what that also tells you is that if they're not necessarily all going around Caleb Williams, that other GMs generally feel the Bears will be taking, you know, Williams number 1. No sense, you know, talking to him. But yeah. I still love Daniels. I still think he's going to be the best of the bunch. I'm pegging on him. I think he's got a little bit of everything: scrambling, throwing, you know, big time situations. Obviously at LSU, he's my guy. I would go all in on him. And you just wonder if all these teams would be willing to, you know, trade 2, 3, maybe 4 first round picks to move up to grab him if they're that impressed.
Yeah, I would not be surprised. There's going to be a lot of movement here as we see these guys in Indianapolis, if they throw or if they won't. So far, Scott, we haven't heard about Drake May or Jaden Daniels if they are throwing at the Combine on Saturday afternoon. We know Caleb Williams is not. We know at this point J.J. McCarthy and Michael Penix Jr. are. You'll hear from Scott and I tomorrow here on Football Full Circle, starting at noon Eastern.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.